office, even if it wasn't his fault at all, he was responsible. And half the time when they happened to offices and they were cashiering, it wasn't really their fault, you know, it happens in Parliament, doesn't it? And, but we,
the beach would be mined and wired, was it?
Well, it would be. It would be, I expect. I don't know about the beach. But
the civilians living alongside?
No.
They
it was completely void of any civilian activity, whatever. They weren't even allowed along the promenade, the lower one. There was a higher up promenade there. But this one, nearer down, halfway down, there was nothing whatsoever for miles. They were going right out of the town and right along to an area where there was some shipping.
Where were you billeted?
We were in the school when we were on that in this school. I was air company.
Was there any interference from German raid, air raids?
No, we never had anything there. No,
could the guns from the France hit you?
Oh, there was. Shortly, barracks was hit, but not while we were there. We were on that job for a month.
And this was pure coastal defence, was it?
Yeah. And from there we moved to Rye.
Yeah, in March to Rye.
Yeah.
Where was the company there?
At Pet Level. There was a village of Pet. We were about 7 miles away from BHQ there. They were Rye, the town of Rye, very old town of Rye. And a lovely town of Rye. Some nice, very nice cafes as well. And
how did the people down there receive
you? Oh, fine. We were tops down there. Once we were away from blooming Folkestone was like a funny town to us. There was an awful lot of Italians. All the coffees seemed to be foreigners. And they were a miserable lot. But again, we were in Shardley Barracks. It was a good village for Shardley Barracks. It was comfortable. We had a ration of fuel and stores in the middle of this in their rooms. There were good block of stone buildings.
What were you doing at Rye?
Mainly teaching people to drive. Every day, up and down. Wait a bit, now that was Shanty. Rye, we've got to now. Well, we were down at Pet Level and we were coast defence again. And there was a guard every night from halfway up the hill where we were all billeted. There was a post at the bottom, it was belonged to the army. And then there was a patrol on every night, 2 hours on and 2 hours off. And we used to get roped into that, the driver. When your platoon was on, you were there with him in your truck. And we used to, no, not with the truck. We used to be one of the guard. Because you used to go out. I didn't mind, it was good fun, really, 2 hours on now. But there was a lot of excitement there. Because all the time while we're there, stationed there, we were 3 miles out of Hastings, the village of Pet Level was, not even the village, Pet was the village, and we were on the outskirts of Hastings, and round from where we were was down where the guardhouse was, for instance, it was on more or less sea level, and from there there was a great valley, but went the way back, and right round like this, right round to the back of the Hastings, and he used to come in. Oh, quite often this happened. You'd hear that a couple of planes used to come in, German planes, I mean, a couple of bombs dropped somewhere on Hastings, and he got several hits on Hastings. They were almost sure to be shot down. They were suicide raids. Caused by our blooming Spitfires were on them, all was on them, and they were warned they were coming in or something, but by gum, they were. But these jerrys, they used to come in, dropped the bombs, and then come down this, and the bungalow that I was stationed in, which was a brand new bungalow, by the way, never been lived in until we took it, and we were up on the hill, and this here, there was this valley going right across there, and he used to drop his bombs all over the town. This was in daylight, mostly, and then down this valley. And of course, you'd see, we were up here, and we would see that we were hearing the planes coming. His ankle, nearly on ground level, belting down the valley, and the Spitfire not flying behind, but he couldn't do a thing about him because of, he would be firing down into the populace, you see. Somebody, we used to see him destroy him and all, right out to sea. If a Spitfire got onto him there, he didn't get away. They had him as he got onto them when he got onto the sea.
Did you take a shot at these aircraft yourselves as they came down below you?
We hadn't chance. It was over too quick. We wouldn't have been helpless anyway.
Your positions weren't bombed, were you?
No, we weren't hit. No, he was getting away then. But there was a battery along from us. We had nothing to do with us. From where our guardhouse was on the bottom by the river, by the sea, about a quarter of a mile, half a mile along, some sort of a half up the hill, there was a big gun, an artillery gun. She was a big one. And that was manned by a small unit of artillerymen. They used to come into our canteen. There was a canteen that a very good benefactor provided, and it was manned by ATS ladies from the village, and girls, and it was a very good canteen, and he was a businessman, he was a barrister, and you know, his quarters were in Hastings. No, I think he went to London, didn't he? Yeah, London anyway. He was a very good. He spent a pot of money on making things nice for the soldiers. Provided this canteen, and then the village women ran it. And every night we spent down there with ping pong tables, and this old chap had provided it all. And there was a battery along there, but I never really heard it fire. But they were there, and
were there any invasion scares?
Nothing came our way. We used to have this patrol along the coast, cliff tops, and it was cliff tops as well, heading towards, I've forgotten the name of the place in between us and Hastings, the nice hotel there. Anyway, this patrol used to go out. It was only certain nights when there was no likelihood of the invasion, the weather was too adverse, and then we didn't have to go out on this patrol. But normally, if it was known by anything else, out on this patrol, right along from ours towards Hastings and back. Black, dark sometimes, you had to almost hang on to the one in front of you. I caused a righty muzzle knob one night when that man got patrol. I came across something I'd never seen before, you see, and we were coming back down the path with drum patrol, and we were coming down here, and suddenly I see two or three little lights down on the side where we were very dark. We were more or less walking, holding the money, and I stopped. And of course, our tin hats clunking, and we weren't supposed to keep quiet. This was a load of rubbish. There couldn't be any enemy within 1,000 miles. But calls over the calls, of course, there was no good about it for stopping. Because our hats clunked. There were, what do you call them? What do you call these little insects to light up? Glowworms. I'd never seen a glowworm before. I was tickled pink. In fact, I picked one up, put it in a matchbox. The damn thing was dead next morning. they were going out through the day and firing courses and some scrubland. For instance, when we were there, they went to A Company. He took so many, so not all of A Company, maybe just our patrol. Our platoon. It wouldn't be our platoon because I took them. And they were going out to fire used mortars. And they were way down. There was a vast area of scrubland, like you see at the coast with gorse bushes and whatnot. I'd got as far down as I could with the truck, and then they had to carry the stuff. They were firing blanks, mortar blanks, out to sea. And they were down there, and I was stuck up near the top where the road ended. And there was a bunch of Canadians came with a big lorry. And they pulled in somewhere not far from where I was parked. And there was a lot of Canadians in that area. It was a time when they were all in the coastal towns, the Canadians. And there was a big raid on Dieppe. Canadians raiding, and there was a lot of them lost their lives. And there was Wickwood Canadian. And they started setting up these big mortars, bigger than we used. The gun that the infantrymen used was just a small thing like this, but this was a one like this. And they were setting these tripods up. I went across them. I said, "Excuse me, but I said, what are you going to fire from there?" I said, "Are you firing live stuff?" I said, "Well, we're hoping to, yes." I said, "Well, hang on a bit." I said, "There's a bunch of DLI down there." I said, "If we wait a minute, we'll see them away down the bottom. Where's your stuff going?" "Oh, well," he said, "we didn't know there'd be anybody else here." Lack of what is in the air between something or other. But that was typically this damn Canadian was as bad as the American from doing that thing like that. Anyway, they didn't continue. I said, "Oh, well, we'll look into this. If your fellas are down there, they're not going to be very safe if we start with live ammunition." So, cancel that one out.
Can you remember anything else that went on in this area which was seen in
Petit? Yeah, well, there was all sorts of things, you know, but they go now.
Do you remember getting involved? Some of the companies got involved with helping the farmers with the harvest.
Oh, yes. That was it. Our lads had a great time. They were hop picking. And I missed all that. No, that was on the outskirts. Yes, that was Pet. Because there was acres and acres of hop fields around Hastings. And the typical hop gathering, as the people down there had done for donkey's years, apparently, all the women and families, all the kids and families, it's their holidays. Well, they enlisted all our troops, all of our equipment. They were there every day, and they were loving it. They had got lasses in there, and their job was with some of our big troops were engaged as well, our three tunnels, going up and down the lines, the women picking these hops. The fellas come along from the farm and they cut the hops down off the way they're high up, and these great climbing things fall down, and then the women had sacks over their backs, and when the sack got full, they tipped it into a big, great big basket on the floor, and then the truck would come up and pick them, empty the baskets, and our lads were doing this for days. And what a time they had. Oh my word. We missed all that, those drivers. We were having an easy time, man, because they were occupied somewhere else. But we were still back and forth to BHQ innumerable times throughout the day, and there was rations every day. We did a few little things that we shouldn't have done, just to oblige one or two lads, maybe getting somewhere where they shouldn't have been, or picking them up from somewhere.
You didn't think you had a cushion in the dog bed then?
No, there was never any animosity, never. Only Corporal Stewart, nobody liked him.
Do you remember in August of 1942, when you were down there, Exercise Harold, a big exercise, where evidently the battalion marched up to 150 miles over a period of time?
I've never heard of it. No? No?
Can't recall that.
No.
Because evidently it was a big, including the Canadians, was quite a big exercise.
Oh, I see, yes. Oh, it was with Canadians. There was an incident, a very notable incident, involving our chaps. We had an amateur boxer in Simi Street in our company, A Company, and we had a big Irishman was a driver, was his mate. He drove a 1300 weight, Tim Kelly, and they were great buddies, this dog boxer, and they went into a pub in Hastings one night, and it was full of Canadians. It was the day when you had to carry out, have your gas mask on your front, obviously. That was compulsory. And they went into this pub, and our two lads, and so they only had one drink, and they said, oh, we can't stand this, let's just down this to get out. So as they were going out the door, there were some very nasty remarks passed from these Canadians. Very nasty remarks passed about the British, two British, as you see. Scared them or something. Anyway, they came out, and one said to the other, Tim Kelly said to this amateur boxer, he says, oh, are you going to stand for that, whatever his name was? He said, no, let's go back. They went back and they took their gas masks off and they put them in the doorway outside and they went inside and they just about wrecked the pub, mind you, but they didn't half sort them bloody Canadians out. Oh, did they not? Tim Kelly was a big bruff. Couldn't half use them. They're not same kind of hell out of the lot. They played a place of them, no. Well, of course, the Red Caps were brought in and hell on, and our two lads were on court martial. And they were tried, and after they tried, there was a court martial set up, and they got a quite a light punishment and a congratulatory little speech from their own commanding officer. He was proud of them.
This was the time of.
That was Mick Berry, and Tim Kelly was the big Irish fella.
This was the time of El Alamein, and obviously the news coming back of a
big
victory.
Yeah.
Do you recall that happening?
El Alamein.
It would be October, of course.
Who was the victory?
In the desert, you know, the big desert battle.
Oh, I see. Oh, well, we met up with the forces that were.
I was thinking that news would come back to England of a victory at last, and what effect that had on you on hearing it.
I don't think we earned much news. We didn't have a case, we didn't have radios and things like that. Not that we could use as we're in the army.
Had you still the same trucks that you've been allocated as Bedford?
Yes, I lost one, mind you, on that exercise I mentioned that was on for a whole week, Bumper. It was just a walking exercise. And we were trailing about on the road miles and miles and miles between one place, and the troops had been marching all day, and then we were off from somewhere else, man, just with this, no lights on, big convoys, because it mixed up with all sorts of other transport. And we were belting away about 3 miles out of Cambridge. We were belting down this main road. What a men. follow, and there's a dip light on the back axle of the truck in front of me. Suddenly, it stopped. I got stopped about this far from the truck in front of me, which was another bout of trucks. But behind me was a passenger bus loaded with troops. And he, poor devil, he had too much weight and he couldn't stop me, hit me, crashed me into the one in front. And my radiator was bust, and I was out of action. And the order was on this bumper, if anybody was put out of action, any vehicle was put out of action, wherever we were at, we had to just sit tight, stay where we were, not do anything about it, and we would be collected when it suited the authorities to set about clearing the place up. And we're 3 miles out of Cambridge. I was there about five nights with the driver's mate. There's no food. But it was a good crowd. The lad I was with me, the driver's mate, we had some bicycles on the truck, you see. So we slept in the truck the first night with them on. Five nights we were there over a week. We had to wait till the exercise was over. And there was an RAF unit not far up the road from where we were stuck on a big wide verge. And my mate, he said, "I'll go into Cambridge and see what I'm scrambling." So we got a bike off and away he goes. And he comes back loaded with sausage and all sorts of pies. And he'd had a right good do. So we had a brew up, I had a stove on board anyway. And we used to be cooking. Then we found this unit of Air Force, and they were all living in luxury in this lot. And so we contacted them. I said, "Oh, there's some spare beds here," they said. "Come and take turns and work it how you like. One of you come and have a sleep, and the other can stay with the truck, and then he can have a sleep." And so we joined in with them, and then we found the finished up feeding us as well, the Air Force units. But you talk about mob, the thought how badly they were treated, what they were having to put up with. And we hadn't been long away from living up to our knees in mud for months on end. Well, understand they were living in heating, blowing this nuts, a great big stove roaring away in the middle. They didn't know they were born.
Had you received training for driving at night without lights?
Well, we did. It wasn't a question of training. You did it, and you knew the consequences. You weren't supposed to go fast anyway, but when you had a long convoy, it always worked like this. You could be going 5 miles an hour in front and no more. But I'll bet if you were a few miles back in a convoy that long, they would be belting along at 30, 40. Because it was a spread out when you come to crossroads and things like that, where each freight has to stop. So each bed would then go to wait. And it was always the same.
Were there regulations laid down upon how many vehicles travelled in each mile, distance between
No, I wouldn't know about that. I wouldn't know about that. Normally we were our own transport. We just...
But you went...
We drove safely and stuck the rules. But you had no control over these vehicles. I mean, RASC and God knows what involved. Big lorries and... We've already talked about when we were detailed to do a course for all the Brassards at South East Command. We were detailed to be a unit that dealt with signalling, putting signals up at roads and posts for directing traffic to turn right or whatever. And with all this gear, we'd never seen it before. We didn't know anything about it. The